Today on CityCast Denver. There's talk of a, quote, crime wave hitting Colorado. Earlier this month, Mayor Hancock unveiled a new plan to address this issue, particularly around Union Station and other areas identified as crime hotspots in the city.
We're going to maintain those hotspots. We're going to hold them so they don't slip backwards. And we will expand this work to three new areas as well as focus on our downtown core. Illegal behavior and drug activities near Union Station, which has even spilled over to the airport, are simply unacceptable.
But I'm not so sure I buy the crime wave narrative, and I know I'm not alone. So I sat down with Police Chief Paul Pazin to get his take on the state of crime in Denver. Today is Thursday, February 17th, 2022. I'm Bree Davies, and this is CityCast Denver.
I can put on a mask. I'm Paul. I'm triple vaccinated.
Also, you're Paul. Nice to meet you.
Hey, I'm Bree.
Bree?
Nice to meet you.
We got a thing right here because Pauls are a dying name.
Oh, are they?
Well, see, I thought they were, but I'm telling you, there's going to be a comeback.
Police Chief Paul Pazin, welcome to CityCast Denver.
Thanks for having me.
So we both grew up here. You grew up on the north side. What made you want to become a police officer?
Well, there are few professions that have a direct impact on our community the way police officers do. An officer often is engaging with a family, a young person, at their worst possible moment. And few professions create that space where you can have a positive impact on somebody's future. And from my perspective, actually, let me bore you for a second. It's what we do in my family. So my mom has given back her entire life to include helping significantly when we're talking about public housing. And there are things that she's done that have helped hundreds upon hundreds of people here in Denver. And then my grandmother is really where that give back or caring gene started. Lola Trujillo is her name, and if you look at all of her kids and grandkids, there's a service component to the lives that her descendants have given. So
it's part of who you are.
It certainly is, I think.
We were kind of talking about this earlier, but there's this conversation about a crime wave. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I'm a little skeptical of that. I live in Southwest Denver, and crime is a problem, but it hasn't. I haven't seen an uptick in my neighborhood in the same way that it's sort of being reported. But this is your work every day.
Mm-hmm.
What is going on? What are you seeing?
We're seeing dramatic increases. So, born and raised here, spent 27 years now as a police officer in this city. We study crime every day, and I can tell you that we're seeing dramatic increases in homicides, in shootings, in robberies, in burglaries, in auto thefts, and in car break-ins. And there was a time when I would call an uptick, say a 5 to 10% increase. We're seeing 55% increase in shootings against the three-year baseline. That is significant. We're seeing a 97% increase in auto theft against the three-year baseline. That is more than an uptick, and people are feeling it. I do talk about auto theft for a lot of reasons. First and foremost, the state of Colorado is the worst state in the country with regards to auto theft. And it was only a few short years ago that that was not the case. Historically, we were at or below the national average. And now we well exceed that area. And from what we see, auto theft itself is like the tip of the iceberg. Auto theft often is involved in shootings, robberies, burglaries, the larcenies, and as we just saw this weekend, hit and runs sometimes that become fatal. And for us to not properly address auto theft when it's negatively impacting family members, when it's negatively impacting higher levels of crime, we're not recognizing that we have an issue.
That actually happened a couple blocks from my house. Joaquin Romero's acquaintance of mine through many different friend circles, I kind of knew him peripherally for a long time. So talking about his hit and run, like you mentioned, this was a stolen car. Mm-hmm. So I can see now, laying it out, that chain reaction kind of that you're talking about, how one type of crime can sometimes lead to other things.
I mean, that family is devastated and is going to be negatively impacted. You know, we got to do something more because the status quo is not working.
Yeah, and the community. I mean, he ran a boxing gym over by my house, and it was just such a community space. So I don't know, thinking about it just so much, when we lose one person, sometimes we're losing this whole, you know, not just his family is hurting, but the kids he taught, the boxers he worked with. Like, so I appreciate that perspective. I'm going to talk about Union Station, obviously, for a variety of reasons. People experiencing homelessness have been congregating there more often, and some folks are really not happy with what they're seeing in that space. Maybe they're a commuter and they see someone out in the open using drugs. There's concerns about violence, intimidation. The city has responded by increasing policing in Union Station. How is that going?
Well, let's go backwards here for a second, because our initial efforts have been around trying to get people connected to resources. And that has been our approach. That'll be part of our continued approach, is to utilize co-responders, substance use navigators, outreach case coordinators, try to get people connected to the help that they are willing to accept. The other aspect to this is we are focused on the criminal behavior, and if somebody is engaged in criminal behavior, then we will take the appropriate enforcement efforts to reduce or prevent that criminal behavior moving forward. There are resources that we work to connect people to. The challenge becomes folks that are service resistant, or a new term that I'm hearing more and more often is service hostile. And, you know, our efforts always are about trying to get people the help that they need if they're willing to accept it. All too often, we are hearing no when it comes to trying to connect people to the resources that are available to them.
Have you seen any visible change in the last few weeks there at Union Station?
Yes. So I make it a point. In fact, I went there Saturday, a scheduled day off. Not that I have much of the way of time off, but if I have a break in my daily schedule, I will drive to go take a look at the bus terminal and the light rail platforms to see what's going on, to see if there is progress or if there are areas where we need to continue to work with our partners to address. So is it, fixed? Absolutely not. But is it better in recent weeks compared to where it was prior to these additional efforts? I would have to say yes, and I would say yes because of my ongoing visits to take a look at it personally.
And you kind of mentioned this, the services that are being offered to folks in terms of like the STAR program, the mental health clinicians stepping in and doing things that I think police officers don't necessarily want to do, or, you know, it's not part of your job description to be helping someone through a mental health crisis. As someone that works in tandem with those services, do you think it would be beneficial for us as a city to have more of, say, the STAR program?
Well, kudos to the mayor and city council because we are expanding the STAR program. I do want to highlight that STAR was not a reaction. We were proactively taking the lead on getting the STAR program up and running in Denver, and it was originally set to start on April 1 of 2020, long before folks were even talking about alternative response on the national stage. We worked with our community partners for 2.5-3 years leading up to the launch of STAR, and that is one piece of a continuum of care. And what I can tell you is co-responder STAR outreach case coordinators are all about better outcomes for individuals in crisis, that they prevent tragedies, and that is pretty amazing. But to make the leap that this is somehow the way to address the shootings, to address the homicides, to address the robberies, the burglaries, the auto thefts or the car break-ins. We've been doing this. We've had co-responders since 2016. We've had the STAR program almost 2 years now, and the outreach case coordinators about the same length in time. Yet our shootings, our homicides, our burglaries, our auto thefts, our robberies are going up. So there is a leap that people seem to jump to that somehow alternative response is some sort of crime-fighting strategy, and I don't see it.
So you're saying like the STAR program or the co-responders are not a replacement for police?
Absolutely not.
Winding through the canyon, her anticipation rose. Monarch Casino Resort Spa, the epitome of mountain chic. Her pulse raced as she sat down at a high-limit baccarat table. Hungry? She chose the Southwest fusion flavors of Bistro Mariposa before ascending to Bliss, a top-rated spa Monarch for a signature massage treatment. She slept well in her luxurious hotel room, fulfilled by her stay. Write your own story at monarchblackhawk.com.
Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call or text 1-800-GAMBLER.
We reached out to Chief Pazin a couple of weeks ago after he stood alongside Mayor Hancock to announce the expansion of their latest crime-fighting strategy, which revolves around what they call, quote, hotspots. Last year, they identified 5 of these problematic areas around the city, including the intersection at Federal and Alameda, which is really close to where I live. And now they're adding 3 more hotspots to the list. These spots will see additional patrols, but also elevated scrutiny through new tech like ShotSpotter, the controversial gunshot detection technology that's allegedly had difficulty distinguishing between things like gunshots and car backfires. Some critics say it only serves as an excuse to get more police in communities that have traditionally been over-policed to begin with. Chief Pazin told me that's kind of the point.
Experts, academics, practitioners, people that study these issues will tell you that often violent crime is concentrated in a relatively small geographical area in urban environments in cities. And in 2020, if you looked at shootings and homicides, 49% of all the shootings in Denver and 26% of all the homicides in Denver were concentrated into 5 hotspots, 1.56% of Denver's landmass. These same experts will also talk about a link to folks that are involved in high levels of crime, and that the best approach is a balanced addressing of both the hotspots and individuals involved in these high levels of crime. So those were the initial 5 hotspots that we worked in collaboration with community members, business owners in some areas, violence interrupters in other areas, residents, faith leaders to try to impact in a positive way gun violence that was taking place in this area. Our focus was on shooting. And so 4 of the 5 hotspots showed significant reductions, and the downtown hotspot showed a 7% increase.
So it sounds like crime is going down 4 of the 5 hotspots we talked about, but overall we're seeing a rise in crime in the city. Can you explain that?
Well, I think I alluded to it earlier. Part of the solution is addressing hot spots, but the other part of the solution is the very small number of individuals that are engaged in these high levels of violent crime, and we need to do a better job of addressing that side of the equation. And again, I think this is an area where we can do better.
So I want to talk about ShotSpotter. We had Councilwoman Candy Sabaca on the show a couple weeks ago who feels that ShotSpotter can bring more police into lower income communities and often communities of color. What is the use of ShotSpotter to you as the person, you know, you oversee the police who utilize this technology? Why is ShotSpotter something that you want to use in Denver?
As I indicated, we are seeing a 55% increase in shootings in our city. And there appears to be some sort of misnomer that ShotSpotter somehow prevents shootings. Let me clear that up. That's not the case. ShotSpotter helps us identify when gunshots go off in a particular area, and it helps speed the response. In several cases, there was not a corresponding 911 call. Officers responded and were able to connect a gunshot victim to medical care that ultimately saved their lives. So we have multiple situations or multiple incidences where ShotSpotter helped save the life of a gunshot victim. So this is just a tool to help address this increase in gun violence. It's not the be-all, end-all. It's not the panacea that's going to solve every issue, but it is part of the solution. It's not the solution.
What would you say to that criticism, though, that this is something used in communities of color, or that communities that maybe already feel some sense of over-policing versus, say, I always throw Wash Park under the bus, but it's, you know, it's not going to see ShotSpotter in Wash Park versus my neighborhood of Barnum, where that, you know, these kinds of things are used. Is that bringing in more police into a community that needs other things?
Well, let me say that we utilize data to identify where ShotSpotter will be employed. And that data is based on crime reports of actual victims of gunshots. So that is the tool that is used to identify the most appropriate location for ShotSpotter technology. And the technology exists in several different areas, and to say that this is exclusive to marginalized or communities of color would also be incorrect, and we'll leave it there.
Chief Pazin, thank you so much.
Thank you. Paul and I, we're doing this. We'll create our own podcast, Paul and Paul.
And here's what else is happening in Denver today. More follow-up on the Douglas County School District drama. The district says that after an open records request by an unnamed individual, they will release the names of the teachers who called out on February 3rd. And that unnamed individual will get to decide when and how to make that information public. Though many were absent that particular day in protest of the Doug Coe School Board's decision to fire its superintendent, Kyle Clark at 9 News pointed out that there's no real way to know which teachers requested that time off as a personal day, or they were out in protest, or, you know, maybe they called out sick because we're still in a pandemic. Anyway, some good news. Denver Public Library's new Art Park branch is officially open. The beautifully designed reading space at 35th and Delgany will serve the Five Points, Cole, Globeville, and Elaria Swansea neighborhoods. Hooray for books! That's all for today here on CityCast Denver. If you enjoyed the show, why not take a minute to tell a friend about us, rate the show wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe to our morning newsletter, where today, my producer Paul Caroli does a deeper dive on some of the things we talked to Chief Pazin about. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. Bye! And now they're adding three more hotshots. And now they're adding hot shots, hot spots, get your hot shots.